Welcome to Them Before Us on American Family Radio, where we strive to put children before adults. Our goal is to educate the public on a child-centric perspective of marriage and family and represent the rights of children on policy matters. Now, here's the host and founder of Them Before Us, Katie Faust.
Welcome to Them Before Us Radio. I'm your host, Katie Faust, founder and president of Them Before Us. I'm joined by my executive director, Josh Wood, and this session, what we're going to cover is all things Obergefell. Obergefell is the decision from 2015 that mandated gay marriage across the country, and we just observed its 11th anniversary. And so we want to give you a little bit of a tour. How did we get here? What has been the impact so far, and what do we need to do about it? But as always, we begin with a little bit of Bible time. And today I wanted to start with Psalm 82. Now, maybe you think this has nothing to do with marriage, but the reality is it has everything to do with marriage. Psalm 82, verse 3 says, "Vindicate the weak and fatherless. Do justice to the afflicted and destitute. Rescue the weak and needy. Deliver them out of the hand of the wicked." This is an appeal to God to judge rightly, to defend the most vulnerable. And that is absolutely the kind of lens we need to use when we think about matters of marriage and family. Now, leading up to the Obergefell decision, the pro-gay marriage camp framed gay adults as the weak and needy. Those that were pushing for the redefinition of marriage said the real victims here are gay people. Lesbians, same-sex couples that have been victimized because they're treated as quote-unquote second-class citizens because they don't have the, quote, dignity of marriage that is recognized by the government. But the reality is, it is children who are victimized when we get the question of marriage wrong. So we're going to spend some time talking about that today. Before we get there, though, Josh is going to give us a bit of a tour through history. How did we get here? Because same-sex marriage did not just suddenly appear. There was a cascade effect of deconstruction of the family that took place that got us to 2015 when we were able to say, hey, you know what? We don't need men or women in this project of the family.
Yeah, and I think it's important to state up front, we are them before us. We are ultimately concerned with the well-being of children. Right? And their right to their mother and father. So it is sometimes helpful for people who are thinking, what is gay marriage? Two adults, right? That's the cultural lie. Two adults, what they do in their bedroom. What does that have to do with an organization that's concerned with children? And so that's where it's helpful to go back and say, is it really honest? If we're being honest, this isn't just the LGBTQ agenda's fault. This has been really a centuries old project by adults who want something, who then deconstruct the family. What we know to be the natural family, right? Mother, father, child. Every single child has one mother and one father. And when they are united to them through marriage, the child does best. You will not find anything more stark in social science than married mothers and fathers raising their children being the most beneficial arrangement when it comes to being a child. So how have we deconstructed that over all this time? It's actually fascinating to go literally all the way back to what was the first situation where a child was created to be intentionally severed from mother and father, what we would call kind of like a sperm donor. It was 1884. This was at a medical school where it was a woman, she was a Quaker, I believe, so a deeply religious person who wasn't able to have a child. And this doctor, Pancoast in Philadelphia, he said, I think I know what the problem is. It's the male. So what if I take sperm from one of my medical students and I actually inseminate this mom? And that's how it all kicked off. She had a baby and never knew that the baby was not her husband's child. That was really, you talking about a donor-conceived child. That's really the first. She was actually chloroformed, wasn't told, had a baby, And we see right in that the very beginnings of an adult wants something bad enough. A doctor says, I know how to fix this, and puts themselves in the middle and says, a child doesn't need a father more than this woman needs a baby. Mm-hmm. And that was the beginning. That's really how this kicked off. Now you go through, really through a couple more iterations of people continuing to make whatever they want a priority over the child. So you see the pill, right? That was sex unbundling from procreation. People said, well, I want sex so bad, I don't want to have a kid. So I'm going to make the procreative act, sex, a different situation. I'm going to uncouple it so I can now have sex without having to have kids. Abortion is a version of that. It's saying, you come into the world under my terms. I get to use sex for what I want sex to be, and I'm not going to have to bear the consequences. Then you get, that was 1960, you get 1969, no-fault divorce. It's now saying, well, actually, it's not just about casual sex for me and not wanting to have kids. We're actually going to move this and say, when I do marriage, what I want marriage to be, I don't like this whole for better or worse thing. I don't like this whole, I can't get out of it if I don't want to. Everything in society is consumer. I can return anything I want. So why can't I return my spouse? Why can't I get out of this without having to declare who's at fault? Why can't we make this easier? What they're moving away from is that if someone wants to destroy a marriage or they want to leave a marriage, which has tremendous financial consequences, right? Like if we were starting a business together, Katie, and I left you high and dry, you'd sue me and everyone would say, yeah, you're at fault. You deserve to go down. Like you cost, you know how much money you cost Katie? But when we flip it and it's marriage, everyone goes, Josh had a right to leave. It doesn't matter what it left Katie with, even if it was financial ruin and wrecked kids. Josh needs to be happy. Well, we don't even say that with business. We don't even say that when we start a business. We literally put marriage in this other category that even if Josh is irresponsible, leaves Katie high and dry, wrecks her financially and hurts her kids, her most prized possession irreparably, Josh should get out clean, 50-50. That doesn't make any sense. But the no-fault divorce laws that started in California and spread said we can actually have marriage be no longer forever, but now optional. That cut permanence. You're beginning to see the family and this institution of marriage shift. What a child is owed. Are they even a part of the conversation shift? 1978 IVF. That was the first time you see even the opportunity to now have even both parents come from somewhere else. You could have an egg donated, a sperm donated, and then you could even put it into a surrogate. That's a third party. What we're doing is now we're creating through this technology. Before, the mom was always present. The child always had the mom, right? There was no situation in which that child would not be with mom. The mom birthed her own child. It was always her own egg. Now we have this situation where I might acquire an egg from India, sperm from Mexico, and have a child in the U.S. that's mine that has no idea where they came from. We're saying the mother and the father. The first one, all the way back in 1884, said dad's not needed. We can get sperm and donate there. Now IVF makes possible mom's not needed. And we should all pause there and say, whoa, first time in history, 1978, that we're really going to have a generation of motherless children. Then we got the affirmation of, well, when that happens. So that what you see is, parents and society are saying, I want that. Two men saying, I want the mother to be erased. Two women saying, I want the father to be erased. Two men and a woman saying, I can't create a child, so erase their parents so I can have what I want. Well, what has to happen to follow? Well, our society has to catch up. So what you see is this new idea that says, I think what has always defined being a parent, if I asked you, Katie, right now, what made you the mother of your children? You'd say, I created them. They came from me, right? That and in any other situation we knew through society with adoption, you'd say, I am now parenting this child, but that child had a mother. And it is tragic that they lost that mother. And I wish that never happened. There was still, even within adoption, a recognition of what they had and what they had lost. Now we have society catching up to say, you know what? I actually think we can rethink this. I don't think creation has anything to do with it. I actually think it matters how bad you want the kid. they called it intent-based parenthood. And again, California, in a case called Johnson v. Calvert, was the first one to say, what matters more than anything is, this was 1993, intent. How bad you want the kid. And so when, if it gets hairy, if we don't know who the kid came from, or the surrogate says, actually, I want to keep the kid now, or the egg donor comes back and says, I want that kid, or the sperm donor, you try to sue him for father support, child support, and he says no, what the judge is going to look at is, well, who wanted the kid first and who wanted him most? So that delivers you, kind of, Katie, all the way to now kids with no genetic connection, marriage is completely optional, sex is unbundled from procreation. And we get to, all right, well, then in marriage, does it really have to be a man and a woman?
There is a sacred triangle of marriage, sex, and babies. According to natural law and according to biblical law, those three things should go together. That marriage should result in children. Children are the product of sex. Sex makes babies. Babies need marriage. Anytime you separate sex from marriage or babies, babies from sex or marriage from sex or babies, you know who pays the price? It's kids. And we've done all three, right? We separated sex from babies through, like you said, the pill and abortion. We separated babies from sex through IVF. And then we separated children from marriage. First through no-fault divorce, and then through genderless marriage in 2015, when we legalized gay marriage across the entire country. So children are paying the price. And I'm really glad that you gave us sort of the 30,000-foot view of how we got here, because it didn't come out of nowhere. We've been laying the foundation for really the commodification of children for 100 years or more. And it has to end. Because we're now at the place where we really are creating marketplaces of children to buy and sell them. That's been going on since we had sperm selling. And then when we figured out how to extract eggs from women and put them on the market as well. And then once we figured out how to really rent the wombs efficiently of other women, then we had the whole baby assembly process. And then gay marriage came in and said, how do we codify this? How do we legitimize it? And we did that through updating our parenthood statutes by doing things like erasing the words mother and father, creating new pathways for adults to legally acquire these children. You see, it's actually supposed to be very hard to detach children from their biological parents and reattach them to biological strangers. Anybody that's tried to do that through adoption understands that you have to do a lot more than walk into an adoption agency and intend to parent the child. You have to undergo screening and vetting and background checks and home studies and references. Why is that? It is because just wanting a child or intending to parent or paying for them does not afford them the same level of connection, investment, and protection as their own biological mother and father are naturally going to give them, which is why we have so many standards for adoptive parents, because unrelated adults pose greater risk to children. But what we've got is a complete reordering of marriage and parenthood law post-Obergefell. That is what we do at Them Before Us. Is a lot of what we do is we identify how parentage has been reordered because we redefined marriage. And that's the inevitable result of legalizing gay marriage. We've done a survey of all 38 countries around the world that have legalized gay marriage. And I bet you can hazard a guess at how many of them have simultaneously reinforced the claim that children have to their own mother and father. The answer is zero. There is no way to say children need, deserve, and have a right to be raised by their mother and father and to affirm gay marriage. Those two things will never go together. We have to choose. Do we think that children come from a man and woman, need that man and woman, are benefited when being raised by that man and woman, are developmentally advantaged when they have a mother and a father, or are children just items to be assigned to any adult with the contract and the intent to parent them? One of those is a child protective understanding of the family. The other one is a child commodifying understanding of the family. And I know where Christians need to land on that. We're going to come back in the next section and we're going to talk about what we're doing about this and why we're going to win.
Welcome back to Them Before Us on American Family Radio.
We're back at Them Before Us Radio. I'm your host, Katie Faust, founder and president of Them Before Us, here with executive director at Them Before Us, Josh Wood. And this weekend, we are talking about Obergefell. We are talking about the Supreme Court decision that mandated gay marriage across the country 11 years ago last Friday, and the detrimental impact it has had on children. We talked a little bit in the last segment about how we got here and how Obergefell has required the reorienting of parenthood law away from the reality that children come from a man and woman and towards a state-constructed family where the government will award children to unrelated adults if they have the money in the contracts. So we've got a direct connection between gay marriage and child commodification. I would say the inevitable connection between gay marriage and child commodification. It's not an accident that gay marriage results in the buying and selling of children in the fertility market. It is the logical outcome. Now, I think that after Obergefell, even in the first couple years, a lot of us felt like, you know what? We were on the wrong side of history. It looks like we're going to constantly be moving towards this ever-increasing world where the modern family is the dominant family, and there's no way to reverse the revolution of the marriage redefinition globe. We are just stuck with this. We're going to be a persecuted minority forever. But interestingly, it looks as though things are starting to change. We just recently, in the last couple of weeks, saw updated Gallup poll numbers that show support for gay marriage decreasing for the first time since it hit its peak in 2021-22. Most of that change was among Republicans. At the height of gay marriage support in 2022, 56% of Republicans said, "I support gay marriage." 2 weeks ago, that number came out, and it was 37%. So we have seen a pretty significant cratering of support for gay marriage. Some of that is definitely the T, the transgender in the LGBTQ, obviously overplaying its hand. And a lot of Christians, conservatives, and Republicans going upstream and saying, well, obviously we got the T from the LGB. Specifically, we got the T from gay marriage. So you see declining support for gay marriage as a result of that. But the other reason I think we are seeing this tanking approval for gay marriage is because it was sold to us as a way to love our gay family and friends, that gay marriage is the only metric to use about whether or not you believe that gay people have dignity and that you love them. And a lot of Republicans went along with that because, you know what? We do love our gay family and friends. But then it became very clear that this was not just about gay adults. This slammed the doors open and went in and snatched children as part of the booty that they get for this legislative win. And so enough Republicans have seen the stories of two men in a hospital bed with a shivering newborn claiming to be their dads when we all know that that child is going to be starved of a mother for life. So, Josh, I want you to jump in here and talk about maybe some of the other things that you have seen that indicate that things are changing here, that it actually looks like the pendulum is about to swing back towards recognizing natural and biological reality as it relates to the question of gay marriage.
Well, you nailed it, that people are seeing, you said the T was a part of it, and I agree. People are seeing what the effect of the continued kind of destruction of the family means. And I think that as Americans, we are pretty libertarian in some ways, built on freedom, right? So we think, man, if an adult really just wants to do something by themselves, away from us, not in the public square, doesn't hurt anybody else, we do tend to be pretty lenient. That's kind of for better or worse. But what we have seen, especially with the T, was it became very visible what the end of that ideology meant for women's sports, women's spaces, locker rooms, prisons, on and on it goes. And that they weren't even willing to restrain themselves with children, that they were going to push drugs and surgeries on 12-year-olds, maybe even younger. Well, what has happened now? A lot of people don't realize this. In that decision for Obergefell, there was a phrase that said that the constellation of benefits that the states have linked to marriage, now applies to, I'm done quoting, it said now it applies to marriage for same-sex couples. And they listed in that decision, this is instructions to courts, that birth and death certificates had to also be a part of that list. So they're listing the things that have always come with marriage. Why did we do it this way? We've always realized it's a biological reality that when a man and a woman get together and they're married and they're having sex, if the woman gets pregnant and has a kid, before we had DNA tests, what did we assume? Well, that the baby was the mom and dad's, that it was the husband and wife's. That's how our society has always operated. In lieu of being able to do a DNA test, and even today we don't DNA test everyone at birth to make sure everything's, because we've always known scientifically, biologically, this child belongs to the husband and wife. So this court's literally said, now that a man and a man or a woman and a woman can get married, we're going to extend that presumption. We're going to all pretend with the force of the law that if the woman is pregnant, the other person responsible for its creation is the other woman in the relationship. That a woman and a woman could be the mother and father. Well, what is that? That's what you talk about, Katie. That's the redefinition of parenthood. Before, it was mother and father is what it means to be a parent, because mother and father create. Now we flipped it. Now it's creation is not a part of the definition. It is all intent with the force of the law. So I think that's pretty, esoteric. I mean, how long have we spent a 15-minute segment unpacking the death of the family? It's hard for people to grasp. Well, you know what people grasp? They grasp a video of two men holding a baby while the baby cries out for its mother and they mock him. That people get that. And if you show them that the decision in Obergefell has prevented states from ever being able to go back and say, actually, mother and father is rooted in creation, it's rooted in biology, and a child comes out of the womb not as an asset to be divided up or to be assigned by the state, but the child comes out of the womb to be protected by all the adults and to be placed with the people they belong with, which is their mother and father, and that they have a sacred right to be with those two people. That shift away from that idea, people get it. They see that video, they get it. I think that's why you see this shift. I think people are beginning to see, oh my gosh, we really have moved so far from mother, father, child, united in marriage, and that being a known ideal for society. We've moved so far from that, that now we're green lighting three men taking home a kid that doesn't have a mom anywhere in the picture. We're green lighting. This is a real story. There was one in Pennsylvania of a guy who was on the sex offender registry who bought a kid through surrogacy. How does that happen? It happens when children become a commodity that can be purchased and assigned. I think people have seen that and said, not just gay marriage was wrong, because it's not just two men or two women doing this. They're saying we need a return to mothers and fathers. We need a return to marriage being a good thing. And I'm not afraid to say it anymore, that single mothers by choice, I don't think that's a good idea. You know, men parenting alone, men having babies. There's an Instagram account called Men Having Babies. It's men acquiring children, buying eggs. It's crazy. They're going, you know, for a while, we all just said, however you want to create your family, it's all equal, it's all fine. It's actually, from the kid's perspective, not fine. And I'm done saying so. And I think we've seen that latest in Bethany Christian Services, which they, in the middle of that kind of the height of the peak woke, said, we're actually going to place with foster children, we're going to approve adoptive parents who are LGBTQ. We're a Christian organization, but we can't hold that value that mothers and fathers matter all the way down into where we place children. And just recently, they repented. I mean, they got together and said, actually, it is not wrong to say that the two people, the two genders required to create a child may be central to their development, and that is an ideal, and that we should do everything we can to mirror that ideal when we place children. And you know, politics, have to take a step aside and we have to think about what's best for the kid. I think that's monumental. How many times do we see a big organization, this is the largest Protestant adoption agency in the country, really taking a step back and saying, you know what, we got that wrong. I mean, this is crazy, but it shows you how the winds have changed here.
I think that you're exactly right, that people feel like, hey, you know what, I can say what I think. And I don't know how many people's convictions have changed. They probably were always uncomfortable with this, but now they've seen the evidence and now they feel free to speak their mind. We see that not just in Bethany Christian Services reversing its position, thank God. We see that not only in the poll results of Republicans who say, I oppose this now. We see it because there are several states, red states, that have said, hey, you know what? We're not doing Pride in June. We're doing Fidelity Month. We're doing Nuclear Family Month. I'm like, I love it. I was like retweeting those governors at the beginning of the month. I was like, you go, you push back against that corruption of the natural family and do it in the name of child protection. We've also seen a huge shift away from corporate sponsorship in Pride events. You know, in all of the June heyday kind of mayhem is really what it is here in Seattle, especially. You saw major corporations sponsoring these lewd, naked, fetishistic events happening in downtown, oftentimes with children in attendance, you know, watching men clad in black leather bondage gear. And you had AT&T slapping their logo over the top of the whole thing. So we've seen, and actually a lot of corporations pulling out of especially things like the Corporate Equality Index at the Human Rights Campaign. The Human Rights Campaign is one of the most powerful LGBT organizations globally. And for a while, they had a noose around the neck of corporate America, you know, forcing them to dance to their tune as it relates to being LGBTQ inclusive or LGBTQ friendly. And that had to do with sponsoring events, but it also had to do with ordering their entire corporate workplace, corporate culture, and HR benefits around LGBTQ inclusivity. And what does that mean? It always means child victimization. At Them Before Us, you can go to our thembeforeus.com page. You can take a look at the hit page that we created against the Human Rights Campaign. Because if you want your perfect corporate equality index score, if you want that perfect 100, 70 of those 100 points are going to come at the expense of children's right to life, right to their mother and father, or right to an intact, unmedicalized body. And so I am so grateful to see that even the corporate world starting to opt out of the LGBTQ madness. So we have an opportunity here. The winds are shifting. The receipts are in. We have seen how gay marriage has victimized children. We have seen how it has reordered parenthood law. We have seen how there's a direct connection between redefining marriage and redefining parenthood. And it is time for us to take action. It is time for us to protect children. We kicked off a campaign earlier this year to oppose gay marriage on the grounds that it victimizes the rights of kids. And it's called Greater Than. You can go to greaterthancampaign.com. One of our primary allies is the American Family Association, who sponsors and hosts this radio show. AFA is worthy of your support. You know, they have been so bold, uncompromising, and unflinching about these matters, even when it was culturally unpopular. It still is. But even through all of the heyday of even Republican support for gay marriage, they didn't compromise. And now they're part of this coalition that we have that is advancing the rights of children and retaking marriage. Josh, you want to tell us a little bit about Greater Than and what it is that we're going to do?
Well, I do think that's where my mind naturally went, is for all of you who feel completely overwhelmed by our collective destruction of the family, what do we do? Well, I think it, we know that what we can do will run right into the Obergefell decision, which is why we believe it must go. It's prioritizing children. It's actually, to be more specific, it's getting back to the fundamental definition of what it means to be a child. That is something that is up for debate right now in society. Is a child an asset that can be acquired, that can be created, that can be constructed by, you know, vendors from across the country and then distributed like a product to whoever we choose? Or does it actually mean something to be the father, to be the mother? Is that part of creating the child? Does a child come out of the womb belonging with those two people? And is that belonging something that we as a society believe is strong enough to be a right that should be protected? That's what we're doing. And so if you look at our campaign, it's really nothing more than reasserting that in law, that a child belongs with those two people. They actually have a right to those two people, and we need to orient all of law and society around ensuring that those two people and that child stay together. And that, honestly, we should do everything we can. We should be giving incentives. We should be doing public campaigns. We should be protecting. We should be banning anything that tries to separate that. We should be banning the markets of egg and sperm. We should be banning surrogacy. It's anything that would detach that child from those two people. And that's what our campaign aims to do.
GreaterThanCampaign.com. I want you to go there. We just posted a video of a guy named Ross who was raised by two mothers. And he talks about how, you know, he had a roof over his head, food in his stomach. Both of his mothers loved him. One of them was even butch. One of them even played the masculine role. So he had a mother and a quote unquote father figure in his home. And he was starved for a dad. He talks about how he hungered for paternal love. The very real lives of children are at stake here. I want you to go to Greater Than Campaign and join us. Thank you for listening. Thank you for giving your attention to the cause of children. We are here to fight for them and encourage you to do it right alongside us.
If you'd like to comment on the show, email comments@thembeforeus.com.
Hey everyone, welcome to Here for the Comments, a Them Before Us podcast series where we dive into the comments and questions that we get online and we unpack the children's rights perspective to answer those questions. I'm your host, Sam, and I'm joined by Jen, and we're here for the comments. So we're going to dive in, and we have been on X all morning because we've been going back and forth with a fun post. So Becky Burke, for those who do not know her, I didn't know her before this. She is, I guess, the head women's basketball coach for the University of Arizona. She basically made an announcement on X. She said, Burke family update, baby girl coming December 2026. Which sounds amazing. Everyone loves a baby. But if you look at the photo, you see that it's actually her with another woman. So what does that mean? It means that that baby is coming from somewhere else, not from those two people. And so we had a little bit to say about that. I'll just jump in with Katie's and then we can go from there. But Katie Faust, she went ahead and responded to that announcement. Again, we're not here to attack them. We're not here to call them names. We're just pointing out the obvious, because when you look at that picture of them announcing a pregnancy, something's missing in the picture. And what's missing? A man, a dad, a father. You can't, two women cannot produce a child. So when we see things like this from a child rights perspective, we immediately catch what's missing instead of just what they're trying to show us. So she said, I have spoken to more than 100 children with same-sex parents. And these two children, because they have two children now, this will be the second, will likely hunger for paternal love, feel guilty for wanting a dad, struggle with questions of identity, wrestle with questions of self-worth. She went way more into detail, but that's like the highlight of it. And she said, when these children are sad or angry or struggling, our culture and courts will tell them that the loss of their dad was the price of admission for a new adult, quote unquote, civil right. And this is why we must overturn Obergefell, which is what made gay marriage legal. So what do you think about all of that, Jen? I know you've been having fun with it this morning.
Yeah. And it was interesting. She got a bunch of news because she locked the original gal, Becky Burke, locked her post. She only got 100 or so comments. I was noting to Sam as we were looking at this, but what Sam pointed out was people quote tweeting. So especially when you turn off your comments, if you still have quote tweets on, people just start answering it that way. And then the thing is, that puts you in their feed. So it's actually kind of smarter. If you just want to keep it on your page, keep your comments open, because people still might see it here and there, but you're forcing people to amplify it to their own feed, which, I mean, so Katie quote tweeted it. It means you take their post, you see it underneath, and then you write your text. So the original post only got 100 or so comments, but then Katie's post got about three times as many views, I think, like 300,000 views, a couple hundred comments, a lot of interaction. And so between Katie responding and a number of people responding, some people's responses we do not condone. We don't want you to go call people names. We don't want you to say, you guys are so sick and disgusting, this is abuse and blah, blah. Try to really, I mean, when you're, if you're a Them Before Us advocate, we're keeping it about children's rights. We don't want anyone to look at her post and see, look, you're making, look, gay people are being victimized. Look, lesbians are being attacked. Look at the comments. Look how horrible people are being to her. We don't want that, A, because don't treat people with disrespect. You don't need to do that. We have a better argument. We don't need to be disrespectful to anyone. But when we keep it about children's rights, when you do a comment that says, no, the reason I'm against it is not because of how you identify. It's because you just made a child to be fatherless. And they have a little boy in their picture. So they've already done that to one. So now they have a boy and a girl. I mean, it's kind of funny. It's like, oh, crazy. You have one boy and one girl. Yeah, because it goes back. They're using all the IVF processes that we talk about that are unethical as well. And like, we are not even diving into that. We're just pointing out, man, you intentionally made a child to be fatherless, to never know her father. And you know what's funny too, is they probably chose the same sperm donor for both. I mean, we don't know. I don't think we know that. But a lot of times they'll prioritize, let's make sure our siblings have that same connection. Maybe they use one woman's egg the first time, they use the other woman's egg the second time. But they're always using LGBT couples or even single parents by choice. Acknowledge biology matters all the time. And then they just decide when it doesn't matter and pretend it doesn't matter for their kids. So anyway, I mean, she got a lot of blowback, some that we don't condone. That's just gross or disrespectful for no reason. And a lot of people just pointing out our messaging. Well, the child has a mother and a father. Why are you doing this? So then, of course, there's news stories about, oh my gosh, they're getting attacked. And this is so crazy. And so she had to post this other, do you have the other one pulled up or I can read it too?
I do. Yeah, yeah. I have it here. So she did another post, Becky Burke. She said, our happiness isn't yours to approve. And then she had this like written out, basically a statement saying, she said, yesterday, my wife and I shared the news that we're expecting a baby. Just cutting in there real quick. They're not expecting a baby. That is not their baby. So anyway, unfortunately, the announcement also brought some of the most hateful comments we've ever seen. While we knew sharing our lives publicly would come with opinions, it's disappointing to see so much negativity directed at what is one of the happiest moments in our lives. She had a lot more to say about that. But, you know, I genuinely feel for people like Becky Burke, and for that couple who recently just ended the life of their child because of Down syndrome, because he made a similar comment where he said, you know, why are people pushing back because we had an abortion? People have abortions all the time. Why is it all of a sudden big news? And they're getting confused because I feel like conservatism, like I feel like the Republican Party is moving more conservative. And now, especially, I mean, I'm not trying to say that Them Before Us gets all the credit, but I feel like we've given people a lot of good arguments and language where we're like, wait a minute, we need to think of the child first. And people are now starting to see it out in the wild and they're starting to like push back more. And these people aren't used to pushback. They're usually in these communities where all they get is good feedback. I'm sure everyone in Becky Burke's life, her family, her friends, her community, you know, where she spends her time, when they announced that they were having a baby to those people, they were like, over the moon, excited. No one mentioned a dad. No one mentioned like any negative, like child perspective opinion. And so when they posted online, like any normal couple usually does, they're not expecting so much negativity because their whole time they've only heard the positives. And again, it's Pride Month. So like all they're hearing about being gay is all this positive, like, you know, more power to you. And like, we want to protect you and we love gay people and gay people are the best. And like, they're just not used to like having any kind of pushback. Mm-hmm. And so I do feel for them just on a human level, because like that would be jarring, you know, and it's sad and embarrassing. And like, it's one of those things where it's like, they're probably not even thinking to themselves, are we wrong? They're probably just thinking like, why does everyone hate us? And we're here to say like, we genuinely don't. I don't hate you as a person. I never even knew who you were. I don't claim to know your character. I don't claim to know if you're a good mom. You're probably a great mom. Your kid loves you. I'm sure of it. But what we're saying is like, all we think of is the child's perspective, the child's rights. And we know that something is missing and it's important. You know, I'm a mom. I have two children. Their dad isn't just like important to them because he's a random man that they've known since they were born. It's not that connection, that comfort level. It's because he is their father biologically, and he has a role to play in their lives, and they deserve that, and they have a right to that. So we just want to make it clear, this is not an attack. And it, like Jen said in the very beginning, we don't want people saying mean, derogatory things to you. We're just here to say, have you thought about this? Because this is important. What do you think, Jen?
Yeah. And something else she says in her kind of second message, like, we don't need your approval and we're going to do what we want, basically. Let us be clear. Our announcement's about something much bigger than us. Representation matters. Visibility matters. As a public figure, I take great pride in representing my community and helping create visibility. And Katie talked about that. She responded to that, quote, tweeted again. You speak about the importance of representation. When will children with same-sex parents get accurate representation? And then she quotes someone, you know, who shares an anonymous message of, you have no idea how lonely and guilty I feel, basically about my parents' choices. I feel like a bad child, especially when I look on TV, I see the good kids of gay parents. They say they have a perfect family and they don't need a mom or dad. But I want a dad. And so the kids, well, and people have joked too, like, representation matters. Where's the kid's father? Like, does the kid's father get to be represented? Does the kids, you were saying this too, it made me think, this is half of the human's identity. When you look in the mirror and you think about, what do I look like? Where did I get this feature or that feature, or my ethnicity, my eye color? Even if you think about culture, you know, people will go to a sperm bank. Let's say you're a woman, single woman by choice, and you're Filipino. And you're thinking, you know what? I'm very intentionally going to choose a Filipino sperm donor. And I want this height, that height, these interests, whatever. So I can kind of, so it's a kid that's going to be integrated well into the community, my ethnic and cultural community. Okay. So again, these things are important to people for themselves and the way they think. But then they don't think, man, what does it mean to be a man who's Filipino? I'm going to have a son or I'm going to have a daughter. Are there things within my culture that are important that would be transmitted and like communicated in a way that are important? But no, not really, because I'm just going to use a sperm donor and you're not going to have any access to that person. Or, you know, you think about mixed race individuals. You're in essence telling your kid that half of who you are, that culture and ethnic piece of you, doesn't matter as much. I decided it didn't matter, so it doesn't matter to you. And I think when we can talk like that, people can understand the argument and like get on board. But yeah, it's always framed by the other side as hatred.
Always. And so you were talking about how Katie responded, and she said, like, again, you talk about the importance of representation. What about the representation for the child? And so basically she just gave like the basic rundown. It's important for a child to have their dad. So Lori Burkhart, which I'm actually not 100% sure who Lori is. I don't know if she is. I think she might be.
She's a writer and a former coach, I'm pretty sure.
Okay. So yeah, I wasn't sure if she was like the wife of the original person, or if it is just like somebody who's a, you know, a friend of that person. So I truly don't know who she is, but she had a lot to say. She responded to Katie's post and she said, oh, so apparently Katie is okay with a father who abuses and abandons his children, who won't support them or gives them no love or nurturing, which is, again, she wrote a lot, so I'm not going to read all of it, but just to cut her off right there. One, if you have to lie about the other person's position to make your argument, you've already lost. Okay. Like, anyone who follows Katie, she's written about it. She's public about it. And it's just basic common sense. No normal person supports abuse. So can we like not play this game? Like, why are you wasting our time? But also, it's funny that she says, Katie is apparently okay with a father who won't support them, give them love, or nurture them, which is funny because you're acting like those things are important coming from a father. Yet you're supporting these two women, taking that away from their own child, or not their own child, but taking that away from a child, where if a father's nurturing and love and support is important, then you should also be against what this lesbian couple just did. And it's also funny because this lesbian couple, just to be very clear, they went into a room with a lawyer, signed papers, paid good money to specifically hire or pay a father who doesn't ever want to know that child. That's what they ordered. They ordered a father for their child who doesn't ever want to know them. He doesn't want to know what they look like. He doesn't want to speak to them. He never wants to protect them from basic things. He doesn't care to love them. That's the father they picked for their child before their child was even born. And again, paid good money for that. So if you have a problem with that, you should also be against this lesbian couple. So I thought that was an interesting take from her.
Yeah. And we don't care who the individuals are. We don't want single men doing it. We don't want single women doing it. We don't want two men doing it, two women doing it, six men, six women, whatever. The point is, it doesn't matter what combination of adults we're talking about. When you're choosing practices that violate the rights of children, we're against it. Mm-hmm. A man and a woman, and they're heterosexual and they're Christian and they voted for Trump, and they have the perfect family and they have plenty of money and all this stuff, and then they want to use a surrogate. No, it violates the rights of children. So it doesn't, you know, they have the perfect picket fence and they wave the flag and they're white and they're Caucasian, whatever. And whatever are the people who attack us think that the criteria is that we're okay with, we're not okay mm-hmm. with it. Anything that violates the rights of children, any adult who does that, we are against you doing that to children, period, you know, full stop. And so yep. Katie talks about how this gives us a very consistent worldview and argument. Every adult is going to run up against these arguments, including so many of us that work for them before us and support the work. We've all had to face the things where I want something and I'm not going to go do it because that would violate the rights of children. All of us have been there. So every mm-hmm. adult is going to come up against it. Any final thoughts before we wrap up this one?
You know, again, I feel like you summed it up really well. That's a lot of the pushback we get, is that it's like, it's only because it's gay people, as if we hate gay people. And I think from the beginning of this video, we're trying to make it super clear. I'm not here to attack anybody. We're not here to hate on anyone. We just want to protect the child. And it's funny because whoever we debated never wanted to focus on that argument. None of them wanted to focus on, okay, what is best for children? So that's what we're here for.
That's right. Well, guys, join us next time on Here for the Comments. And we just take you all the crazy stuff we see online, help you answer with a children's rights perspective. Until next time.
Yeah.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.